singer Demi Lovato is now receiving inpatient therapy at a rehab facility after being released from Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles over the weekend.
My OD was obviously hard on me, but it also had some serious repercussions for the people closest to me.
Demi's on the news, and also I'm passing through the news. There's all this stuff about like me being in photos next to her when she was having a hard time. I got like death threats. People showed up at my apartment to like threaten my life.
That was really challenging for her. It was challenging for anybody that stuck by my side through that period.
Oh!
You look
my little naked face baby.
Oh my god.
Are you ready for this?
I think so.
Yeah. Like I said,
yeah.
Clear your name.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of saying anything.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And I just want the truth to be told because you deserve that.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I love you.
Oh, I love you. And the only reason why I'm not crying is because if I start, I won't stop.
I'm trying really hard.
You already have your makeup on.
Any interview, take one. Mark?
Okay.
So, when I called you about doing this, you were incredibly nervous. Why were you so nervous to sit down here?
It was having to relive it. Having to go back in my phone and, you know, look at the screenshots from her fans just telling me to die and kill myself. And I would say like maybe 4,000 to 5,000 a day.
She was a part of my professional team. She was my choreographer and she also happened to be a good friend of mine. It was awful to see what happened to Dani after people thinking she had something to do with that night. My fans are amazing. They're very passionate, but they're a little out of line sometimes. Because they want what's best for me, but don't always have all the information.
The people who know me, it was laughable to them. Like, oh my God, if you only knew this girl at homecoming. She was the one pouring people's Red Bull vodkas out in the bus, like didn't want to get in trouble. They were like, how on earth are you the girl that gets blamed for this? And it was laughable for a day or two, not thinking that it would stick. And then once it continued to stick for days, weeks, months, a year, it was the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with my whole life. When everything started to unfold, I was in the hospital with her, watching, just looking at her laying there. I just wanted her to live. And I remember one night my mother sat me down and screamed at me and she said, I cannot watch my little girl take the fall for someone that did something like this. And I just remember looking at her just like, it's gonna be fine. And then it wasn't. I lost all my teaching jobs. No one wanted to bring their kid to a apparent heroin dealer teacher. I lost any artists that I was working with. They didn't want to deal with the drama. I would go to studios. I would have like TMZ following me to the studio. I had to rethink my whole future, all because of someone else's decision. And that was terrifying.
I feel terrible that it's taken this long to get her story out, but it's taken me a while to come to terms and process with that night of what happened and be ready to talk about it. I get why after the OD I was so focused on myself, but unfortunately it took me too long to realize how my choices affected the people I really care about who had stuck by me. I'm just glad that she got the chance to talk today and clear her name because she wasn't involved in all of that.
Okay,
yeah.
I have
go.
The Today Show
go.
In less than an
Please,
hour.
Go do it. Shut up, your face is 2 seconds to be.
I love you, but no.
I love you, thank you.
Bye, Anna.
Bye.
I feel a lot better. I feel like I just gotta pep talk to like the mom. It's like, honey, you're gonna do great.
Twisted reality, hopeless insanity. I told you I was okay, but I was lying.
Who are you and what do you do for Demi?
I'm Demi's head of security and chief of staff.
But I'm gonna interject because he's so much more than that. Max is someone that protects me like I'm his own daughter. I'm grateful that you're sitting next to me today. And it's just really hitting me like a ton of bricks.
Most business managers don't play a vital role in the story of a pop star's life. Why is Glenn Nordlinger so important in your life?
Oh God, that's another one. It's just never left me.
And he was there from the start. He was there before me.
Yeah, he was there since I was 15. You really figure out who is there for you when the world falls out from under your feet.
During the 2018 tour, she was in a very bad way. These are stressful days where you went to bed at night with your phone ringer on loud. I would get daily updates from Max, and you know, we were starting to formulate a plan of how to help her when the OD happened.
Glenn was just right there straight away. He was, how do I help? What do we need to do?
And we need to bring in good people in around her to help her, irrespective of the cost. And this is where years of putting aside money and being responsible with her money really paid off.
The first time I met her, we were sitting in a room and she was saying that she didn't want to be there. And I said, you know, how old are you? And she told me how old she was and said, who's paying for you to be here right now? And she just looked around. She's like, I am. I'm like, well, then you don't have to be here. Like, you can go. So I think initially it was difficult for her. And as time has gone on, I think that that has been one of the most important things of, okay, what are the choices that I want to make?
When I went out to visit her, it was just, you know, what do you want to do? She said, I love music. I want to get back into it, but I want new management.
I got reached out to by her business manager after the overdose. He told me she was the only person she wanted to meet with was us. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, with everything she had gone through, I honored that. But I had every intention of telling her no. I felt overwhelmed at the time. We had a plan for not only how we were going to say no, but who we were going to recommend. And once she started talking and pouring out her heart and soul, we realized that absolutely we need to manage her. She didn't need a manager, she needed a friend. She needed someone who knew what to do, but also didn't need her to work.
Why was it so important to you to land Scooter as a manager at that moment in time?
I am an artist who just overdosed on heroin. Like, I'm kind of a liability. Like, I don't know if people are gonna wanna work with me. It was scary for me, but I didn't feel intimidated at all. It made me feel really safe.
I wanted to know the real story of what happened, what treatments worked in the past, what treatments didn't work. I wanted to know who her support system was, where she was in her recovery process, and if she had an understanding of that it's constant.
From the moment I found out she overdosed, through her entire stay in the hospital, the only thing I cared about was her getting better. I knew that it didn't matter what happened to her that night or who she got these drugs from. I knew I could tell by her face that she was never gonna be around those people again.
I wish I could say the last night that I ever touched heroin was the night of my overdose, but it wasn't.
She called and said, hey, I've relapsed and I need help.
It was the same guy, I think, and Syra and I were not thrilled about that.
Her decision to meet with that dude again, when people are in the throes of addiction, nothing shocks me.
I had just done a week-long intensive trauma retreat. The night that I came back from that retreat, I called him. I wanted to rewrite his choice of violating me. I wanted it now to be my choice. And he also had something that I wanted, which were drugs. And I ended up getting high. I thought, how did I pick up the same drugs that put me in the hospital? I was like mortified at my decisions.
Anytime that it's this like, how could you do this? It's coming from a place of, oh, I want this person to be okay. How could you do this again? How could you put yourself in this position? As opposed to, oh my gosh, you must have been in so much pain to put yourself in that position again.
I called him back and I said, no, I'm gonna f you. And it didn't fix anything. It didn't take anything away. It just made me feel worse. But that, for some reason, was my way of taking the power back. All it did was bring me back to my knees of begging to God for help.
How do we help you create a life where to have a sense of autonomy does not mean putting yourself in these harmful situations, that being able to, you know, abuse your abuser is not where the healing is going to come from.
I know that sexual trauma has been the hardest part for you to talk about. Was there a specific reason that you didn't come forward sooner?
Honestly, ever since I watched Rihanna and her pictures get leaked after the Chris Brown incident, I was very uncomfortable with even more of my story playing out in the press, and then also people maybe not believing me.
You know, it's easy from the outside to say, how could someone like Demi Lovato not have a sense of agency, right? Having grown up and started at such a young age where she wasn't able to develop that sense of agency, you know, the more that people tried to control her behavior, the more it's like, well, where do I have a sense of control? Where can I make choices?
And I know what I'm about to say is going to shock people too, but when I was a teenager, I was in a very similar situation. I lost my virginity in a rape. I called that person back a month later and tried to make it right by being in control. And all it did was just make me feel worse.
So you filmed the first Camp Rock 2 years ago.
Yes.
Now you're filming this one. What do you think has been the biggest change in you from 2 years ago?
I've become more aware of just life and people and the way that, you know, the business works. And it's definitely for the better. I think that I'm able to protect myself a little more, but also I'm able to still learn more and teach other people. So it's been awesome.
Both times were textbook trauma reenactments, and I really beat myself up for years, which is also why I had a really hard time coming to terms with the fact that it was a rape when it happened. We were hooking up, but I said, hey, this is not going any farther. I'm a virgin, and I don't want to lose it this way. And that didn't matter to them. They did it anyways. And I internalized it, and I told myself it was my fault because I still went in the room with him. I still hooked up with him. Here is the thing, I was a part of that Disney crowd that publicly said they were waiting till marriage. I didn't have the romantic, like, first time with anybody. That was not it for me, and that sucked. And then I had to see this person all the time. And so I stopped eating and, you know, coped in other ways, cutting, throwing up, whatever. And my bulimia got so bad that I started throwing up blood for the first time. I'm coming forward about what happened to me because everyone that happens to should absolutely speak their voice if they can and feel comfortable doing so.
You wrote most of your songs. You're 16. Where does your inspiration come from?
Believe it or not, being 16, I've been through a lot, so.
Come on, how much heartbreak can you have at 16?
Oh, a lot.
You know, women are typically more oppressed than men, especially at 15 years old, and especially as a little child star role model, you know, who's supposed to be perfect, who had a promise ring. So what, I'm supposed to come out to the public after saying I have a promise ring, 6 months later, I'm supposed to say, well, actually, I had sex, even though it was rape. Like, some people are gonna see it that way, or at least the Christian Southern girl inside of me didn't see it that way because sex was not normalized as a child or in the South. And you know what, f*** it, I'm just gonna say it. My Me Too story is me telling somebody that someone did this to me and they never got in trouble for it. They never got taken out of the movie they were in. But I've just kept it quiet because I've always had something to say, and it's like, I don't know, I'm tired of opening my mouth, so. There's the tea.
After everything that happened with the OD, you know, I think she felt so horribly guilty and disappointed in herself that she had let herself go back to that place again despite everything. She was like, I have to tell Scooter.
I was in negotiations. I met with him and I said, hey, look, I need to come clean about some stuff.
You know, Demi, I knew she had her ups and downs, but after the overdose and the speech that she gave me and the things that she said, I thought there was no chance of a relapse. 2 weeks in, she tells me that she relapsed.
I was expecting him to say, I'm leaving. Like, I'm not signing you, I'm sorry. But instead, he was like, I'm afraid that you are going to end up in the wrong hands. I'm here to support you and I want to help you through this, not punish you.
And it's a very different conversation, right? Than the conversation that says, hey, your sober companion just told me that you were in the bathroom for a long time. I'm going to drug test you. And when it comes back positive, I'm going to take away your phone and make you go back to residential and make all these choices for you.
I don't know if Demi made the decision to go sober when she was 18. That was really kind of the ultimatum that her team gave her is get sober, otherwise we won't be working with you.
I never want to say that the control placed on me was entirely wrong. Some of it came from a place of love. I just think that by the end of it, I didn't get the help that I needed.
Do you ever think about giving up on her?
No. That's never crossed my mind.
I couldn't, and no, not once.
Do I ever want to give up on her? No, did I want to bash her head in with a brick? Yes, that's the truth.
Yeah, absolutely, I've thought about giving up. There have been a couple times where I thought, if that's how she wants to go out, then God damn it, let her go out that way. But I don't think you truly ever really give up on someone like that. I think there's always a part of you that hopes they're gonna get back on the horse and they're gonna figure it out.
When you're dealing with addiction, it's not something that just gets cured one day. Like, it's a constant battle. You're in it with somebody. So when she said it to me and I saw how scared she was, it's just a very real, easy answer. As long as you tell me the truth, we'll work through it.
I have just always had that mentality of, if there's a problem, let's find a solution.
Even if I was not related to Demi, she would be one of my biggest role models. I remember we took this walk around the hospital floor. She was in her hospital gown and she had IVs and stuff on her hands, but I didn't see a hospital gown. You know, I saw a robe. Like, damn, this girl's going for the belt.
I remember being in my hospital bed and thinking, all right, how do I fix this? How do I get back to doing what I love, which is making music?
Demi is an honest songwriter. A lot of people are nervous about telling everything. Demi thrives on using her music in a cathartic way.
I feel like with anyone, I knew that was a song that I wanted to release coming out of all of this because I thought, if I ever make it back to the stage, I want to sing this song.
Watching her perform anyone at the Grammys after like dying, I was like, go off, bitch. This is such a big moment for all of us.
When I listened to the lyrics, I definitely thought it was foreshadowing my overdose. I recorded it days before and the lyrics were everything that I was feeling, you know, in the hospital.
Anyway.
From a fan's perspective, she went away for a while, she performed. But to go from a hospital bed to that total rebuild, not something that people often get the opportunity to do.
I feel like sometimes, because of what happens in her personal life, we forget that she is legitimately like the most incredible singer.
The fact that she's given her voice a rest for the last 2 years.
Her voice is just like
new level.
Nobody's listening.
I remember you calling me to tell me you were gonna do the national anthem.
Just to be there and hear her voice is moving in itself.
because there was a point where I didn't know if I would ever see that ever again.
My dad was like, that performance made me so proud to be an American.
He's like, oh, cute.
I love it.
It was just like Grammys, like, bam, one of the best performances of the Grammys of all time.
Literally.
She's crying at the beginning. She's got to start over. Standing ovation. We're losing our minds. Nah, she's not done yet. National anthem. One of the best ever. Losing her mind. Drop dead gorgeous. Perfect. New single. Album's coming out. Like, and then it was all downhill from there.
Breaking news tonight on several fronts in the coronavirus pandemic. Broadway going dark, Hollywood shutting down. The NBA delaying their seasons. Tom Hanks infected.
When quarantine happened, she said, Mom, I'm bringing stuff and I'm gonna come over and quarantine with you.
But I did meet this guy and I can't imagine quarantine without him. So,
okay, we're gonna be quarantining with my daughter's boyfriend. I'd never even met him.
Oh my God, I just invited somebody that I don't really know that well to stay with my family. Wasn't the most responsible thing I've ever done.
Thank you.